Thanks a lot. It is an absolute honor to be here at Webstock. I have been hearing about this conference for years, and everything I've heard is amazing, if anything, people undersold it. So I appreciate your time, I appreciate being invited, and thank you. Is Ross Float in the audience? Ross, will you stand up? Ross Float is a designer. Is Chris Collier in the audience? Stand up, Chris. Chris is a designer. And Bruce Sterling, after hearing the things you wanted to do to your cat, I think you are probably a designer. Would you please stand up? How many people in this room are designers? Stand up. How many people in this room are ID or IX or whatever you're calling yourselves this week? You people are designers. Stand up and be proud of it. You people should feel good about what you are. I'm about to make you feel bad, and then I'll make you feel good again in a second. My name is Mike Montero, and I am a designer. And along with my partner, Erica Hall, who's sitting right there, I run a web design studio in San Francisco called Mule Design. Oh, we got a hashtag, by the way. And I became a designer for the same reasons I'm guessing most of you became a designer, because we enjoy making things. We enjoy creating. We enjoy bringing new things into the world. And that's really powerful, because yesterday something didn't exist, and today it does, and we're responsible for it. And that's pretty cool. And I'd always wanted to earn a living being a designer. Unfortunately, I was a terrible employee because I loved to argue with the people who were paying my salary. So in order to keep creating things, I had to create a company that would hire me. So then this act of creation had to be coupled with this act of running a business, which I realized I was neither very good at or enjoyed very much. So my partner and I, we had to learn about this stuff to stay in business. We had to learn how to handle clients as we went. We didn't know any of this going in. And at the same time, my view of design was changing, because now that we got to choose what to work on, we saw a lot of stuff that we didn't want to work on, and we got to say no to it. Because I wanted to be very careful about what I put my name on it, what went out with my company's name on it. And I began to see design not just as the act of creation, but more as an act of choosing what to create. And along the way, we made a lot of mistakes, and we learned from them. And after a decade of being in business for ourselves, I had made enough mistakes to fill a book. So I did. It's for sale in the lobby, along with Karen McGrain's book, which I hope you buy, and we'll sign it for you at the after party. And it's about things like getting clients, and charging for your work, and presenting your work, and getting paid. But what the book is really about is responsibility. Designers taking responsibility for their careers. And there's something I touched on in the book just a little bit that I want to elaborate on today, and that is your responsibility, not just to yourself and not just to your clients, but also to the wider world. We are designers because we love to create. But creation without responsibility breeds destruction. And that's what we're talking about. And it starts with a story that was in the Wall Street Journal just a few months ago. This is Bobby Duncan. At the time the story was published, Bobby was 22, and she attended the University of Texas at Austin. And like most 22-year-olds, and like I'm guessing most of the people in this room, Bobby uses Facebook. Bobby also likes to sing and play the piano, so much so that she wanted to join the chorus group at school. Bobby's also a lesbian. So Bobby joined the Queer Chorus at UT Austin, which, like many other organizations, has a Facebook group page run by the chorus's president, who is understandably proud of his group, as he should be. And when Bobby joined the chorus, he routinely added her to the chorus's Facebook group because that's how he communicated with the members of the chorus about events, rehearsals, and other things like that. Here's the other thing we need to know about Bobby. For reasons that are nobody's business but her own, she hadn't come out to her parents yet. And she carefully managed those Facebook privacy settings to make sure that she built a wall around what her parents could see and couldn't see. And I'll reiterate, the reasons for this are her own damn business. Now, if you've ever waded into Facebook's privacy settings, you know what a nightmare they are. They're divided into categories, and then each category has subcategories, and it brings up this stupid modal dialogue, and nobody knows what any of this actually does, and they change it every couple weeks anyway. Here's a diagram that the New York Times put together a couple years ago to help you. Here's what they look like now. I'm just gonna keep that up there a little while. And the worst thing is, these bozos have a history of changing things on the fly and opting members into all sorts of new stuff that they didn't ask for. But here's what happened to Bobby. When the chorus president created the chorus Facebook group, he made it open. Because, in his words, "I was so gung-ho about the chorus being unashamedly loud and proud," as he should have been. The chorus isn't a secret organization. Now, unbeknownst to him, Facebook made three very important design decisions. One, that anyone besides you can add you to a group. They don't need your permission, and they don't even need to know you. Two, when someone adds you to a group, it goes up on your wall for all of your friends to see. And most importantly, three, the group settings override your own privacy settings. Sorry, got a little messed up there. The settings that Bobby had worked so carefully to set for herself, so a third party, the chorus president, without any malice on his part whatsoever, inadvertently notified all of Bobby's followers that she was part of the Queer Chorus at UT Austin, including her father, who, according to the Wall Street Journal, left vitriolic messages like this on her phone, demanding she renounce same-sex relationships and threatening to sever all family ties. And he posted this to his own Facebook page 2 days later, a page that Bobby helped him set up. Bobby was devastated, understandably devastated. She had made a very careful decision about how to handle her life. She had thought it through, and she did the work of setting it up, and it was completely undermined by a careless design decision. Of course, this was all a few months ago, and Facebook has since learned its lesson by announcing the imminent release of Facebook Graph Search, where, as Tom Scott pointed out on his site, I can do things like search for Islamic men interested in men who live in Tehran, and also the places where they've worked. I mean, what the fuck could go wrong with that? This is irresponsible design. And you may be thinking, oh no, that's a business decision. Bullshit. It may have started out life as a business decision, but to get on the interface, to be live, to get to where people can interact with it, it goes through design. And when a designer lets a bad business decision through, that's a decision as well. Facebook's reply to what happened to Bobby Our hearts go out to these young people. Their unfortunate experience reminds us that we must continue our work to empower and educate users about our robust privacy controls. In other words, it's not our fault. We're sorry that our clusterfuck of settings and our general disregard to your privacy destroyed our family, but it's not our fault. So whose fault was it? Because Facebook's privacy settings didn't just happen, they're a decision. They're designed to work that way. And at the heart of this, there's design. And hopefully a designer. Sadly, design happens whether there's a designer present or not. But too often it happens in the presence of a designer who either doesn't see the problem or sees it but will not speak up. And I imagine they weren't designed by one person. I imagine it took a team of people. Very smart people, one would think. After all, you don't get to design privacy settings for a site with a billion people unless you're pretty smart. I would fucking hope. And I have to think that at some point along the line, one of these smart people might have had a hunch that what they were designing was too complex, too hard to understand, a violation of someone's privacy, and possibly even unethical. Because yes, I do think it was unethical. And as soon as any of these very smart people noticed a problem, one of three things could have happened. One, they ignored it. They saw something that was badly designed and potentially harmful. Something that if you just walk through a couple of use cases, you realize can easily result in somebody's privacy being violated, and they did not speak up. Perhaps they were afraid of getting fired. Perhaps the culture they work in isn't a culture where designers speak up. And you're probably thinking, holy shit, what irresponsible jerks. But I'm guessing many of you in this room, including myself, have probably been at that stage in a project where we're so exhausted and so ready to be done that we just think, this is probably good enough, let it go. Number two, they actually voiced their opinion. They did the right thing and they pointed out a problem. They followed the chain of command and entrusted that the person above them would take care of it. In a well-run organization, you can rely on the person above you to both listen to your concerns and to make the allowances to the schedule we need in order to address the problem. And we know how fucking often that happens. Unless, of course, the person above them ignored it. And we've all been here, we spot a problem, we bring it to the larger group so the problem can be solved because we want to make it better. And we're told we got to ship. Either a deadline's coming, or we're already over budget, or the fix would put us over budget, or someone's bonus counts on somebody meeting a deadline, and we're told it's not that big a problem. It's not a showstopper. We'll send out a patch at some point. In other words, someone says, fuck it. Someone higher up says, fuck it. Someone higher up tells somebody else to say, fuck it. This is how bad design makes it out into the world. Not due to malicious intent, but with no intent at all. And as we saw from Bobby, bad design can have severe real-world repercussions. No one intends to approve bad design. By the time a designer gets through the entire approval process, sometimes enough people just want to be finished. Or they're afraid of repercussions, that everyone might just agree, this is good enough. And enough good enoughs taken all together are not good enough at all. And yes, those privacy settings are a nightmare. But I don't want to turn this into a case study for a single bad user interface. I'm sure half the people in this room could probably make those privacy settings better with just an afternoon of work. What I want to focus on for the next 40 minutes is why. Why we approach the job like we do. Why we take on the projects that we take on. And why we give up so easily when we encounter obstacles. I want us to talk about our responsibility as designers, and I want us to understand the cost of what happens when we make shit. And we're all familiar with these scenarios, and we come across them every day. We see things going out the door that we're dissatisfied with, or don't work properly, that don't conform to best practices, or worst of all, they violate the trust that our users put in us. And some of us try to keep these things from happening, and some of us don't. We may see it as somebody else's job. We hope that somebody else shows up in time to fix it, and we get upset when they don't. Who in your organization can pull the plug on something that sucks? The answer, of course, is you. It has always been you. There is not a cavalry. There is nobody else that's going to do your job but you. We are mired in a design culture that either doesn't understand its responsibility to the world we live in, or worse, it doesn't care. And it doesn't take malice to bring bad design into the world. All it takes is carelessness. Design is nothing more or nothing less than human beings' attempt to explain and manipulate our environment. Design is not just how something looks or feels, but also how something works, and most importantly to us today, how something affects. How it affects an individual, a class of people, and ultimately the environment that we live in. And when designers disregard the effect that manipulation has on the environment, they are at best negligible, at worst culpable. And when design is practiced without foresight to consequences, without responsibility, what we get is not creation, but destruction. Which reminds me of this tongue twister of a quote, and you'll pardon me, but it was written by a scientist, and they can be a little long-winded. Basically, it says, make it first, and we'll figure out the repercussions later. Cool, we'll just throw a bunch of people in a room together, and something interesting will happen. We'll figure out what to do with it afterwards. After all, this is how we built the atomic bomb. We need to fear the consequences of our work more than we fear the consequences of speaking up. We need to fear the consequences of our work more than we love the cleverness of our ideas. And when the fear of taking that responsibility and the fear of getting in trouble is greater than the fear of causing harm, we stop becoming designers. We become agents of recklessness. When we create without thinking, we become death. This is Viktor Papanek. Viktor was a designer, an educator, and an author. And he was one of the first advocates of socially and ecologically responsible design, way before the design community was ready to hear anything that he was talking about. Viktor hated bad design, and he didn't take too kindly to the designers that made it. Viktor believed that designers had an ethical responsibility to design things that were beneficial to the world and to design them well. And more importantly, that we have an ethical responsibility to not make things that we do not want in the world. In Viktor Papanek's eyes, we are gatekeepers. In 1971, Viktor Papanek published Design for the Real World, which I encourage you all to read if you can find a copy. Sadly, it's out of print. But this book has shaped how I think about design more than anything else I've ever read. And it's safe to say that if I hadn't read this book, you might not have ever heard of me. In it, Viktor describes a design community that's in total disarray and in service to rampant consumerism, and he gives it the smack upside the head it needed. This is the first sentence of the preface. There are professions more harmful than industrial design, but only a very few of them. And I have no doubt that if Viktor Papanek were writing this book today, after the emergence of the web, he would strike that word industrial from the sentence for being too limiting. I cannot think of a more exciting way to open a design book. He goes on to say, before, if a person liked killing people, He had to become a general, purchase a coal mine, or else study nuclear physics. Today, design has put murder on a mass production basis. It's a happy book. The design community was not pleased. He was blacklisted, scorned, and shunned by the very community that he was trying to elevate. But the thing is, Viktor Papanek was right. Taking responsibility is not a nice-to-have design skill. Responsibility is not a luxury you get to tack on later, after you've built up your portfolio or made a name for yourself. This is not something you allocate a small percentage of your time for. Responsibility is core to what we do. You are responsible for the work that you put into the world, and you are responsible for the effects that work has upon the world. Because today's web, it's in our phones, it's in our cars, it's in our schools and traffic lights. Right now at Tom Coates' house, there is a lamp and a phone playing and singing a song and doing God knows what. We can use the web to control our home security systems, to keep an eye on our children, to monitor what medicine our elderly parents are taking, and to keep an eye on whatever terribly subversive things may be happening in our public parks. And as Bobby Duncan can attest, the web is in our closest and most intimate relationships. Cerebro exists, and we can hold it in our hand. And whether we end up calling it Facebook Graph Search or something else, we will have designed it, we will have built it, and we will be responsible for its existence. And while we may build things with the best of intentions, we also live in a world where the bad guys are billionaires who dine with the president, and the good guys are hunted down by the U.S. Department of Justice. And as the web expands its reach into our lives, we need to completely understand the responsibility we hold at our fingertips. Anything that is this pervasive, when handled irresponsibly, carries with it the power to destroy us all. And we, the people in this room, we stand at the doorway of what is possible to build and not build. What comes to the web goes through us. And we can either ignore the consequences of what we choose to design, or we can say, no, that's bad design. That's not going to happen. That's not getting through me. We focus so much on what we can do that we forget to ask what we should or shouldn't do. But in the end, the monsters that we unleash into the world will be named after us. But I'm not here to bum you out. Bruce did a fine job of that this morning. I want you to feel good about what you can do, because I love being a designer, and I want you to love it just as much. And the more you understand your power as a designer, the more of it there is to love. Responsibility isn't a burden for you to carry. It's your potential. It's your potential to fulfill as a designer. It's your potential to create rather than to destroy. Your potential to move humankind forward. So I'm going to tell you about our four fundamental responsibilities as a designer, and then we can go drink beer. One. We have a responsibility to the world that we live in. This is not a choice. This is the job. Design works in the service of a better world. Always has, always should. Design is, by definition, problem solving, and the world is so blessedly full of problems right now that we're going to have work for a very long time. So ask yourself, are the problems that we're taking on worth solving? Do we need 36 more iPhone docks? Do we need 59 more iPad cases? What about 179 camera apps? And here's something that was making the rounds a while back. It's a jacket that inflates when you get a Facebook like. Reinforcing the notion that warmth and comfort should be doled out on the basis of popularity. I honestly can't imagine doing less with the time you have on Earth. Our infrastructure is rotting. The world economy is crap. Major media outlets are flushing entire journalistic and investigative journalism departments down the drain. Wall Street is awash with criminals, and billions of people can't get basic medical care, food and water, and we are building apps to rate our sandwiches, to tell each other where we are, who we're with, and when we've gone to bed. We're wasting our time designing digital farms for our phones. We need real farms in our inner cities. We need access to fresh water. Too much of our knowledge is available only to a few. We need solutions for the upcoming apocalypse that Bruce so beautifully told us about this morning. We used to design ways to go to the moon. Now we design ways to never have to get out of bed. We have more processing power, affordable tools, and combined intelligence this very minute than at any point in the history of design, and we are using it to build shit. It's time to aim higher. Too many smart people are deciding on what problems to tackle, what problems to put their energy into, not based on whether those products solve worthy problems or improve someone's lives, but rather on whether they can be funded and flipped. If we only tackle the issues that Facebook, Twitter, and Google are interested in acquiring, then when will we tackle those they aren't? And after spending a few days here in New Zealand, which is awesome, I'm sensing that you people still believe that you can make things you love, things that have an impact in people's lives. You still have hope. And venture capitalists are the most dangerous of all charismatic megafauna. They are like snakes, and they will run through here, and they will destroy your entire country. And they will tell you that you need scale to survive. But let me tell you, hope scales better than anything. It's time to stop hoping other people will solve important problems or hoping that people will let us solve it for them, but start solving them ourselves. Recognize the power that we have to change things. Recognize the power that we have to make things happen, and also recognize that with that power comes the responsibility to do it right and to do the right thing. And remember, every single time that you, as a designer, make it easier and more pleasant for anyone to find and use information and tools that help people live their lives, you have contributed something important to the world. We have very limited resources, whether natural, financial, or cognitive. Don't contribute to people wasting them on crap. As a designer, you have a responsibility to your craft. The way you work individually affects the ability of all designers to do their jobs. Each job you do is a contribution to and a representation of the entire craft. Every time that you agree to take on a job that's detrimental to the craft, or behave in a way that undermines design, you are putting the rest of us in a hole that we have to climb out of. And I can't tell you how many times I've had clients show up at my door looking very hesitant and apprehensive, and the story is always the same. They've worked with a designer in the past who they entrusted with their project, and they've gotten let down. Now, the reasons are myriad, but the end result is the same. They feel cheated. They need to rebuild their trust in design. Their budgets have been squandered, and they're looking for all sorts of assurances that it won't happen again. And this makes my job harder, and I don't like it when my job is harder than it needs to be, and I'm sure you don't either. You benefited from all of those who came before you, and you need to help your fellow designers and those who follow after you. You are merely the present link in a chain that stretches back to the dawn of humanity, and part of a network that spans the globe. And just like you learned from the mistakes of those in the past, you need to document and share your own successes and failures for the benefit of those coming after you. Learn from those that came before and inspire those who came next. Number 3, now a designer has a responsibility to the clients they take on, obviously. First and foremost, you have to make sure that you're choosing the right clients to work with, people with problems that need solving, and with problems that you have the skills to solve. You have a responsibility to do the work right, even if they are trying to talk you into doing it wrong. Don't work for anyone that you're afraid to say no to. Remember, you are not an order taker. You are a gatekeeper. Tell your client when they have a bad idea. Tell them when they ask you to work in a bad way. Tell them when they aren't giving you what you need to do your job, and then tell them what the right thing is, and then do the job. You were hired to do good design, not to make people happy. If you want your job to be making people happy, I suggest making sandwiches. People love sandwiches. And if every designer prevented their client from going to a bad place, less clients could, and they would stop expecting it. And since I wrote the book, I've been getting email from lots of designers telling me horror stories about client interactions, and the majority of them contain some form of, they make me do this. No one can make you do anything you don't want to do. No one is in charge of your actions but you. Imagine a world where the CEO and the marketing director are sitting in a conference room and they're sweating bullets because they're thinking, we are never going to be able to talk the designer into doing this. That is a fucking beautiful world. And it's within your reach. Most clients want to do the right thing, and they don't know that they're doing the wrong thing unless you tell them. You owe it to them to tell them. They hired you to tell them. Imagine how this plays out 3 to 6 months down the road. You've done everything the client asked you to do, even the things that you knew were terrible ideas, and the project fails. And the client calls you into their office and says, the project failed. And you say, oh, I knew it would, but I did everything you asked me to do anyway because I was scared of getting fired and I was scared of upsetting you. Well, guess what, sport? Both of those things are about to happen. So why not risk them happening while there is still a chance to solve the problem correctly? Before you've blown the budget, before you've wrecked the schedule, and before you've cost other people their jobs by not doing yours. If your client tells you to do anything that prevents you from doing the job you were hired to do, you have to tell them. Designers complain about clients, and they never say anything to the client directly because designers are afraid of getting fired. Sometimes the best thing that you can do for your client is to be willing to get fired. Now, all of these responsibilities, though, are just part of your ultimate responsibility, your responsibility to yourself. Because all of this other stuff isn't about altruism. It's in your own best interest. We are here to make money. If you take responsibility for your work, you will do better work. You will enjoy it more. You will have the respect of your clients and your colleagues, and that will ultimately lead to better opportunities. This isn't a perfect world, I know, and sometimes just doing enough work to pay your bills is your biggest concern, and that's fair. But remember, you always have a choice, and all your personal choices have personal consequences. The work you choose to accept defines you, not just as a designer, but as a person. Your portfolio is a record of your choices. And if you choose to do work just to keep the lights on, consider how those choices accumulate over time. One cigarette ad in your portfolio is a youthful indiscretion. This is a fucking love letter to the tobacco industry. And while you have a responsibility to earn a living, doing it at the expense of society's well-being makes you no better than a Wall Street banker. Your portfolio is just another word for your reputation, which is just another word for your integrity. And every time you make a conscious choice in your profession, an intentional choice, rather than just letting things happening or accepting what is handed to you by others, a choice of problems to solve or clients to serve, even a choice of compromises to make, you are fulfilling your responsibility to yourself. This is possible. I've taken those bad jobs. I've executed the stupid feedback. I'm here as a survivor of all of the stupid mistakes I'm asking you not to make. But what I found out was that when I started saying no to people, they started listening. When I turned down a bad job, a better job eventually showed up. And when I stood up for design, clients took me more seriously. And when I did the right thing, and I took the good job, it led to an even better job after that. But in order to not destroy the world, we may need to destroy some obstacles in our path. After all, I brought gasoline and I brought matches, and we're going to use them on something. You need to destroy your ego. You are not bigger than the problems you are solving. You need to stand up for yourself. You need to walk proud, and you need to carry yourself with self-respect, but you can never put yourself above the work. Real self-respect is tempered with the humility to understand when you are wrong and the confidence that you can learn from that. Your ego is nothing but fear getting in the way of solutions. Can we do this? Can we do this? I cannot fucking hear you. Can we do this? Destroy your fear. You will be wrong. There will be someone better than you. You will not get every job, and you will fuck up some of the jobs that you do get. You will make mistakes. These things will happen, and you can fully recover from them. Never trust a designer who's never been punched in the mouth. Not only has he never done anything interesting enough to get punched in the mouth, he lives in fear of what getting punched in the mouth might feel like. It's not that bad. Get over your fear of speaking up. When something is wrong, it's on you to voice it. You cannot keep bad design from happening if your mouth is closed. Can we do this? That's better, but it's still not loud enough. Can we do this? Yeah! You need to destroy your apathy. Every day, thousands of designers go to work not caring what they're going to work on and who it affects. They just grab the next thing on their plate and they execute it without thinking. Be intentional in your actions. If you don't care what you're designing, then stop. A designer that creates things they don't care about is like a chef that would serve you rancid food. There are other professions. Find one you love. Life is too goddamn short to spend it not caring what you're doing. Can we do this?
Yes!
Destroy that art director that's hanging over your shoulder. Every time you let somebody else tell you how to do your job, you are teaching them that that is how the job is done. And I'm tired of hearing designers complain about that guy and hoping that guy would stop hovering over their shoulder, but not doing anything about it. Try telling them this. Don't tell me how. Tell me what. Tell me what needs improvement. Let me earn my salary. Let me figure out how to fix it. Act like the fucking expert that people hired. Can we do this? Destroy that voice inside, the one that's telling you to accept less than we're worth, to design with approval in mind, the voice that tells you to design not what you know is right, but what you think will get approved, the voice telling you not to get in trouble. Designers should welcome trouble. Can we do this? And I fucking hate that I have to include this, but I'm going to. Misogyny is rampant in our industry, and it is shameful. Almost every day, I hear stories about female colleagues being harassed, both in the workplace and when they have the courage to get up on a stage like this. We are supposed to be building a better world and pointing the way to the future, and yet we cling to the bullshit and the hatred of the past. To build a better world, we must learn to become our best selves. We must look at all our problems from diverse points of view. We are going to need everyone's help to do this. And we must give a hand up to the people that we have kept down. And I happen to believe in the power of romantic teenage girls. And I believe that they grow up into strong, competent women, and that they're better at spotting monsters before we do. And when we tolerate this bullshit, we are just as culpable, if not more, than those who commit it. This shit stops now. Can we do it? These people have put together the most amazing conference I have ever been at. They have worked their ass off, and they put on a damn good show. They pour themselves into it, and now they are done. And they can take this building, but they cannot take what you've learned, because Webstock is not here. Webstock is here and here and here. So take what you've learned, go out and spread it. Free from the bounds of architecture, we can grow stronger and bigger than this building, which cannot hold us anymore because we are too strong. Can we do it?
Yes!
Wake up. It's time to be aware of what we're doing. It's time to be aware of the impact that we have, no matter where we work. If anything, a designer working for an oil company needs to be more aware and give more of a shit than a designer working for the resistance. Because a designer working for a big, dangerous, multinational business is in a position of doing a lot more damage. So if anything, we need our best designers working at Facebook. We need our most belligerent gatekeepers working at BP. And we need our biggest assholes in a position where they can tell Rupert Murdoch to go fuck himself. Bobby Duncan needed a designer at Facebook to do the job right, and she didn't get one. And we should be ashamed of that. And some of us don't work in companies where we get to choose what to work on. But we do have a choice in working for that company. You always have a choice. Just because you aren't willing to take it doesn't mean it isn't there. And even if you work for the most evil company in the world, it's still your job to evaluate everything put in front of you and decide whether you're okay having your name on that. But you'll get fired. Yeah, you might, and it's not the worst thing in the world. But it does suck. But you can always get another job. You can always get another client. You may have to create it. But it's easier to recover from losing a job or a client than from losing your self-respect. You can always start another company, have another idea, get another chance. You can always dust yourself off and claim victory tomorrow. Not only can designers change the world, we fucking need to. The fight for good design is the fight for an equal web, an open web, a more accessible web. We don't fight for the sake of design. We fight for the sake of the Bobby Duncans of the world. We fight for the sake of those who need us, and we fight for the sake of those we've lost. When you decided to become a designer, you accepted the role of gatekeeper with it. You are responsible for what you put into the world and for its effects upon that world, because we only have one of these. And it's always been our job to help the rest of humanity understand it, and excel within it, and farm it, and view it, and build on it, and hell, even escape it once in a while. But most of all, it has always been our job to protect it, even if and especially when we must protect it from ourselves. Thanks.